Who am I? I'm Aaron Neville.
Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show. We have a very, very special guest today, and we don't want to waste much time with intro music, so here we go. This is Gary LeBlanc from Mercy Chefs, who's literally on the ground in our tornado-devastated grounds in Kentucky. So without further ado, I'm going to let Tom take over.
So you're playing a little Aaron Neville. Of course, you know Gary's from New Orleans. That is a thing we had loaded in our system from when we did a show with Burl Kane from the Louisiana. And that's Aaron Neville singing Amazing Grace, by the way. So it's just, you know.
About perfect for this show, too, with
it is.
Gary's New Orleans or Louisiana
Hotel
Association.
Hotel Monteleone. Okay, I'm going to read Psalm 61. O God, hear my prayer. Listen to my heart's cry. For no matter where I am, even when I'm far from home, I will cry out to you for a father's help. When I'm feeble and overwhelmed by life, guide me into your glory where I am safe and sheltered. Lord, you are a paradise of protection to me. You lift me high above the fray. None of my foes can touch me when I'm held firmly in your wraparound presence. Keep me in this glory. Let me live continually under your splendor shadow, hiding my life in you forever. That's the first five verses of Psalm 61. We have Gary LeBlanc, who got started with this thing called Mercy Chefs. It's not Mercy Ships. That's a different thing. Mercy Chefs, like a chef in a restaurant, in response to Hurricane Katrina, which hit his native New Orleans, I believe it was in 05, and out of his response to that and his desire and his wife Anne to provide hot and tasty meals to people that are dislocated by natural disasters, this is how Mercy Chefs came about. We've gotten to know Gary and the passion with which they serve people that really have had everything taken from them.
We even got to sample some of the delicious meals they make for
these
people.
They're as good as you'd make in your house, by the way.
Even better, because Gary's a professional chef.
Yeah, and his
really
background
good.
Was with the, it's in the food industry in New Orleans. They have gone to Western Kentucky, the area that has been so hard hit by the tornadoes. And there's a chance, you know, that they will be there for a long time. One of the things that you see right after a natural disaster is all this outpouring of grief and support and everything, and then within a couple of weeks it's as if people forget about it. And Mercy Chefs has been known for having sometimes fairly lengthy deployments that can go on for months, and you know, this is typically long after the news cycle has moved on to something else. You know, they don't forget about it. So, Gary, I'm not going to talk a lot more, but tell me a little bit about what's going on. We're also going to want to ask you for how folks could contribute to helping the work of Mercy Chefs. And I want to thank you on behalf of my state and the people in the Commonwealth of Kentucky for what you guys are doing to help people in our state that are in such pain and suffering.
Well, Tom, it is quite a scene here. We're in Mayfield last Saturday. We're actually doing some holiday outreach in Waverly, Tennessee, where we worked after the floods. And we were able to pick up our mobile kitchen there, and we made it into Mayfield in less than 12 hours from when the tornado came through, and started feeding hot meals last Saturday night. And the need here is just so great. And it's not just here in Mayfield. It's all along the route. I mean, all of Western Kentucky and four other states were just hammered by this. There are places here in town that you can look 360 degrees around you and not see anything that's intact. I mean, nothing. It just is really horrendous. And the small communities, the towns whose names no one has ever heard of, all equally affected. And yeah, it just has been tough. Last couple of days, we've had this other weather come through. The temperatures have dropped and it started raining. We met lots of families that were still trying to stay in their home, but the cold with no power and the rain and damaged roofs, they just couldn't stay. So Mercy Chefs is here doing all we can. We do very simple thing. We do beautiful handcrafted food, and we share it with folks that have lost everything. We're meeting so many people here in town that are so grateful for a delicious hot meal. And it's just our desire that it brings some comfort and hope to them in the middle of a very, very difficult situation. So many lives were lost. So many homes were lost. And people are facing a very sad Christmas season. I think there are a lot of people that will never have a Christmas again that this horrible tornado isn't first thing in their mind.
Hey, Gary, just briefly talk a little bit from a personal standpoint about how Mercy Chefs was born and kind of the thing that brought it about and made it happen.
Well, I came up in the hotel restaurant business in New Orleans, spent 20 years there, worked with some of the very best people in the business and learned my craft, my trade. And I was living in Virginia when Katrina hit. And I went back down and volunteered with a bunch of other groups. And most of the people I saw serving food down there were doing a really poor job. I mean, they got food out. And I know everybody was grateful for that. But I looked at it and I said, there's a better way to do this. This isn't how you serve somebody that's lost everything. There was no love in the food. There was no food safety. There was no passion or professionalism. And after Katrina and serving my hometown, I believe there was a better way to do this. And that was the birth of Mercy Chefs. It was a mission call for me. It changed my life that day. I had the call and it has changed my life every day since then. So for the last 15 years, we've been focusing on serving food that I would be proud to share with family or friends.
Yeah, absolutely. We attended kind of a conference or weekend that Mercy Chefs had in Nashville and firsthand saw a sort of a small deployment to suffering people there in Nashville and saw the food quality, and it's quite good. The thing that's so difficult right now, we've begun to get an uptick in inflation. Anybody who's been studying the markets knows that, and people that listen to this show know that. And one of the biggest areas is food costs. And Mercy Chefs has to go out there and buy the chickens and the different vegetables and things that they serve to people. This is why the financial side of it is so important. And it's mercychefs.org. Is that correct, Gary?
Mercychefs.com.
So mercychefs.com. Mercychefs.com. The thing that you should understand, and I'm not knocking any other aid organizations, would never do something like that. But I think a thing that is a distinguishing factor about Mercy Chefs is that they run it very lean. They don't have this big bureaucracy. They're not this organization with lots of corporate jets and things. You're still waiting to get that corporate jet, right, Gary?
Well, there are a few things I would do before a jet. Yeah, but,
that's what I thought.
But, you know, one thing that you do have are the most amazing mobile kitchens that allow you to deploy and be somewhere in 12 hours.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's the important thing. And then you're also trying to raise some money for food storage facilities so that you can keep your food costs down, too. We got something in the mail, I guess, just yesterday about that.
Well, it's back to Tom's point about the rising prices and the supply chain issues in the country. Our grocery bills are just out of control right now. When you buy your groceries in the tractor trailer, you really do feel a 40% increase. It hurts. And there are things that we can't get, items that we just absolutely need on site. We've realized this year that if we don't buy them in bulk and store them, we're not going to have access to them. And these are the things that we absolutely need responding to a disaster. So we have got to find us a warehouse, and we've got to get a couple of our own trucks, and we have to have some refrigeration and freezer space to be able to hold things so we can respond so readily. But the challenge is these last 2 years with rising costs and supply chain being broken have really stretched us in a lot of ways.
Hey, Gary, what are some of those items that you like to store just out of a common interest?
Well, whenever a disaster strikes, the three compartment clamshells that we put food in, those get very rare. And the picnic kits with the knife and fork and spoon. And then even things like aluminum pans that we use in our ovens. To cook the food. The pans right now, we can get pans, but they're the lower quality, and we can't get lids for them. It's really funny how these things work. And this year, for the first time, we've seen allocations from some of the large distribution companies that we buy our food in bulk from. You know, it's not unusual for us to order 1,500 or 2,000 pounds of ground meat. Our order shows up and they're like, well, no, we can't give you that much. We've allocated you. You can only have 200 pounds. And those kinds of challenges have been really hard to overcome, but we have great chefs and we always have something on site to cook with. And they react and they overcome the situation and we still serve beautiful food, but it's a challenge when you're expecting 2,000 pounds of ground meat and you get 200. You've got to do something different for dinner that night.
Gary, I want to ask about kind of the spiritual, emotional, human side of the whole thing. When these people come through, it's not just food that they're needing. In fact, that might actually be lower on the list than other things that one might need. And you guys are trained to respond to people that have severe traumatic kinds of damage and experiences. Is that correct?
Yeah, those are the people we're seeing. Those are the people that we're serving. We believe something amazing happens over a shared meal. You know, Tom and Elizabeth, we do that as friends. We do that as family. But when you're doing it with somebody that's just lost everything, or maybe lost loved ones, it's a real honor. And we just hope that we can provide that moment of hope and that moment of compassion and be there. People just want to know that they haven't been forgotten and that someone cares. And that's what we're able to do with a hot meal. Just remind them that the rest of the state, the rest of the country is standing with them in this time of need. You know, we had a guy the other day come through the drive-thru line, and we put meals in his car, and he opened it. he's like, this is just beautiful. It's hot. I'm going to enjoy this so much. And one of our people asked him, said, so what are your plans for Christmas? Well, the man broke down in tears. He just completely came undone. He had lost someone in his family. I never found out who, but someone in his family had died. He doesn't have a place to go to work. His home is destroyed. And he looked up at our staff person and he said, you know, I haven't even thought about Christmas. It's been the furthest thing from my mind. And I don't know what I'm going to do for Christmas this year.
Wow. You know, it hits home for me. My mother or my grandmother was from Fulton, Kentucky, which is just a little bit west of Mayfield. Mayfield is in Graves County. There are little towns down there like Wingo, Kentucky, where our Congressman Larry Hopkins came from. There's actually a lot of folks that live here in Lexington that have connections to Mayfield. Ms. Shug Pettit, she was Foster Pettit, our former mayor's wife. She grew up in Maysville. I used to go call on the banks down there, that town square where, you know, we've seen all the pictures. I can remember walking in the bank. My dad used to call on the school superintendents down there. So we have connections to it also, Western Kentucky being, you know, a good ways from where we live, but nonetheless, it's part of our state, and there was some wonderful history from down there. And when you have that loss of place, you are in danger of really losing a sense of who you are if that's where you're from. And it just seems to me that the work of Mercy Chefs to, you know, provide, hey, we can at least start with a meal. You may feel you've lost everything, but we're going to help you somehow try to put your life back together. That's beautiful.
The most fundamental need is shelter and food. And you can't necessarily put their houses back, but you can give them something hot to eat. I was reading a story that was written recently about Ann, Gary, and I am shocked to learn that you all have served 15.5 million, that's million with an M, meals in the past 18 months. That is just crazy. How many of you served where you are right now?
Well, I think in Mayfield, we're going to end up at about 30,000 by the end of tonight. A little smaller number than we sometimes put up, but very focused, very, very targeted to the people here in need. Yeah, those 15.5 million meals kind of caught up with us and surprised us a little bit. You know, the COVID thing just made so much need for people, especially in rural communities. Mercy Chefs has really worked very hard in rural communities around the country. You know, the food banks don't serve out in rural communities all the time, and they just don't get the attention and the support from the other social systems that help you through a difficult time. So we've worked very hard. That's where the majority of those meals were served.
It's a big, big number. And with that comes a big price tag too. It's not for free for sure. So
that's Mercy Chefs, MercyChefs.com.
You know, in another place.
Be generous with them. Yeah. I mean, you can really help some. This is a direct thing. It's not a lot of money going off to a bureaucracy or, you know, this or that. It's going straight into meals.
Gary,
I would say that people just need to know that if they give a gift today, it feeds somebody tonight. We're on the ground. We're right in front of them, and we're putting it all out there. And they just need to know that their donation is that quick to the need.
That's good.
Now, on the Facebook page, that's Mercy Chef's Facebook page, I saw where people could sign up to come help serve food. Is there still a need for that?
The volunteer portal that you can get to through the website, as well as Facebook, is a great place to volunteer. You know, there's been such an outpouring here in Western Kentucky. We have folks coming from every state that touches Kentucky to volunteer. And frankly, we've had plenty volunteers, but that is going to fall off really quickly. And we're going to stay. We're going to serve through Christmas here in Mayfield. So everybody that wants a hot meal on Christmas will get a hot meal on Christmas. And so we're going to have folks that come out and work through us on that. But that's a great way for people to connect. And again, that website, mercychefs.com, is where they can find out what we're doing, how to volunteer, and then what our needs are and how they can partner with us.
And you said that some politics, Senator Paul, you spoke with today or within the last day or so, and they're going to try to continue to provide as much support as they can to keep your deployment there as long as it can be.
Well, he had lunch with us today, and we served him the same lunch that we served 1,500 other people here in the community. And it makes me so happy that what we're serving everyone here in Western Kentucky is something I can be proud enough to serve the senator. And he's here with his whole team. He's trying to find out how he can open doors and move hurdles and get some direct relief right to where it needs to go. He was here with local representatives and the mayor, and he is very impassioned about making sure there aren't roadblocks of hurdles here in Western Kentucky.
Gary, thank you so much for your time. We're going to let you get back to what you do best. You give a good interview, but you're an even better cook. So take care of those people down in Western Kentucky, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again soon. You're listening to The Tom Dupree Show. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Oh, Lord, I'll never be free. Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show for the second half of the first hour. We had Gary LeBlanc from Mercy Chefs with us for the first half of the hour. We were so grateful for his time. And so for this part of the hour, we have Missy Clifton, who's mic'd up, and our host, Tom Dupree.
Yeah, right. So I think that, what is this?
This is Trombone Shorty. This is what you asked for.
Oh, it wasn't this song, but he's good. So I'm going to tell you a story.
I guess that's my cue to pot it down.
No. So we got invited to a wedding in Louisville one time. It actually wasn't in Louisville. It was
just outside.
It was in Oldham County on a farm. And the party afterwards was on the Belle of Louisville riverboat. So we went out in the river on the riverboat. There was this band that was playing kind of Dixieland, kind of hip hop, jumping around all over the boat. It was Trombone Shorty. They had hired, he wasn't as big a deal. He's got a different name. I can't think of his name. It's like Eric or something. And he was jumping around all over the boat. The band was jumping around. They were really good. And I said to myself, they are going to do something quite notable one day. Now, if you remember, when was the NCAA in New Orleans. And it was 2012. We won the NCAA in New Orleans in 2012. And Trombone Shorty played the intro music for that, that, you know, when they would come in back from something, you would have them playing. And, boy, it was good. I just remember that. Well, I think it was 2012. It was when we had Anthony Davis, and, you know, we lost to IU that year, and I think that's the only loss we had. Anyway, so just interesting. Our friend Gary LeBlanc, just on the first half of last of this hour. So we're very sensitive to kind of the one of the things that we've been on a lot is COVID and the vaccines and things like that. I had a, and I'll reiterate this. Sometimes I'm asking for people to cuss me out, but I would reiterate my plea for you to give us feedback about the show. What do you think about it? Do you not like it? Do you like it?
What would you like to hear about?
T. Dupree at DupreeFinancial.com, or in the case of one guy, our phone number, 859-233-0400. If you're inclined to call in the middle of the night and you don't want to leave an email address and you'd like to use a lot of curse words, 3 a.m., I promise you there's nobody here in the office that's going to answer the phone. And we did have one gentleman with a distinct Irish accent who...
think it was a real Irish accent, or you think...
No, it was real. He he just absolutely cussed me out the first message. Then the second message, he said, I want to apologize. I got a little rough, and then, you know, he was saying this, and then he started getting warmed up again, and then he's dropping the F-bomb again a bunch of times. And he was just as mean at the end of that message as he was the first one.
But we appreciate hearing that, sort of.
No, we don't.
Sort of. Well, what we want is positive and maybe some positive criticism. Because you don't always want to hear everything. You're so great. You're so great. The purpose of feedback.
Of course you want to hear you're so great. You're so great. Are you kidding me?
Well, to an extent.
I'm not asking people for criticism. I want them to tell me how great it is.
Oh, please. What I'm asking for as a producer is some feedback about what you'd like to hear.
So let me finish about this guy. He made some points. One of the things he made was, you know, you're an investment guy. You're not looking at the numbers. Well, the fact is we are. And it's just not the numbers that are being put out by the media. And, in fact, I will say that one of the things that has contributed to our success as a firm in the investment arena is looking at the numbers that we go out and do the research on that you normally might not find in media sources. We don't just go buy Apple because everybody says buy Apple. If we own Apple, which we do and have for years, which has been a great investment, but the reasoning is going to be because we did the research on the numbers, not because 10 people said go buy Apple. We've owned some things over the years. Many have been very good investments where we did the research and unearthed what we thought. As for vaccines and COVID, I will simply tell you that I've researched drug companies for 35 plus years, and I know how they work, and I'll leave it at that. I think it's important to get news that's off the beaten path because the media, and that would be the incumbent media, the media that owns the big name broadcasting logos, typically has figured out that if they can keep certain politicians and power structures in place, that it's gonna, they're just not gonna have to work very hard and get all the advertising, and they've co-opted not only that, but lots of the big corporations. So being a conservative, someone who thinks differently than the pack, has gotten a lot harder in recent years. But the point is, I signed up for hard. When I signed up to do what I do, I could have been in another job with another company at this point, basically retired, and it was boring to me. And I chose not to go the easy route, and I enjoyed doing what we do here. It's very rewarding, but we're trying to help you, the listeners. And you just have to start with this idea that you cannot believe everything you hear. You should research the stuff I say, because it could be wrong too. But I'm going to tell you I might be wrong. I'm not going to operate with the assumption that I know everything. Therefore, if you know what I know, you know everything.
Missy? And Missy, you talk about a heck of a researcher. Missy, one of the reasons that she comes up with so many good things is I would put your research up
she's
against
a little bit,
anybody. I really would.
I don't know about that. But
I would.
Tom actually let me listen to a little bit of the really colorful commentary from the gentleman that called in. And it's interesting. It is very evident that I realize that we're viewing data or viewing what we're being told in completely different viewpoints.
It's like two parallel universes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's the most polarizing and the most confusing topic.
Right.
That I believe I've ever seen in my lifetime.
So on that, Tom had handed me, he said, "Hey, did you see the recent New York Times article that came out today?" And it's funny because I had just seen, just 12 hours earlier, you've got the
why does that not surprise me?
Just the New York products that come out. You've got the New York Post and the New York Times, and yes, one tends to be supposed to be a little more serious news, or was regarded as more serious news, but their circulation has dropped. The New York Post has actually, I was looking at, had actually gone up, but the New York Times is making this entire vaccination thing about a political view. He literally, it is the most damning article, and damn the Republicans. Gosh, if we were just a nation of Democrats, this would all be taken care of, and it would all be over.
Yeah.
It would be over. It is completely political. He makes the vaccination political. Then you turn around and you look at this New York Post article that was written just 12 hours earlier, not even, and it is completely non-political. And its entire thing is on the fact that Columbia University says the Omicron variant is markedly resistant to all vaccines and that boosters may not be any help. It doesn't say anything about Democrats, doesn't say about Republicans. It's just stating from a Columbia University research that the vaccinations should not be looked at as the opportunity to save us from the terrible mutating COVID virus. And then further articles that were attached that I went and read about were, again, talking about the fact that there's no help me out. There's
virologist.
No, thank you. Virologists that would argue that viruses, as they mutate, become weaker, you're more susceptible to spread, but they have weaker symptoms.
One of the things that comes to mind is the drug companies have a lot of money, and they can buy research and buy doctors. And so when you see any research that comes out either pro or against vaccines or not vaccines or COVID or not COVID, you have to ask yourself, where is the funding coming from to do? Because Columbia University is an extremely woke place. How is their research being done? Is it done to corroborate a certain viewpoint? Who's paying for it? Who's behind it? Anymore nowadays, you have to ask that. It's that old adage, consider the source.
Absolutely. The article ends, it says, one of their studies, that in addition to the one that they're doing, showed Omicron is roughly 70 times more transmissible than Delta, but less severe, and that because this study is showing that the booster absolutely does nothing for the Omicron variant, that there's a grave warning to the scientific community and a call to action to stop the push.
But how are they going to stop the push when everybody in the scientific community and the medical community has been bought and paid for by the drug companies?
That's right. I think Pfizer's already busting out the champagne over this one.
Over what? The Omicron?
That we can keep moving this along.
Of course.
You've had new flu variants that have been arriving every winter like clockwork for all of my life.
Yeah.
And yet, and people die. People die from the flu every year.
Some years, a lot of people die. We lost, I'll tell you who died from the flu. Dick Hurst's daughter, was her name Paige, I think. Hope Hurst. She ran Hurst Printing Company.
No, Hurst Office
Supply. Hurst Office, it used to be called Hurst Printing Company. She passed away like 5-6 years ago.
Not even that long ago.
From the flu. She used to be on the radio. Nice young lady. And she got the flu. And see, here's the thing. Here's what all of these things, this is what I have tried to incorporate into my diet. It's all about inflammation. If you can take the inflammation out of your body, you have a better chance on a lot of levels of not dying. I'll tell you, and this, people say, well, it's anecdotal. I take turmeric mixed with oil. It's just in my diet. I take, if you think you're avoiding inflammation by taking Advil on a regular basis, sorry, it's not helping you. It's not a natural lower of inflammation. It's an unnatural lower of inflammation. And over time, it's not a good thing to take a lot of it. You got to incorporate anti-inflammation into your diet, because even if you get this thing, the big problem is the cytokine storm, where your body puts off all of these incredible antibodies to fight it, which can cause you to get congested or not even breathe. This is documented. I don't have to be a doctor to tell you this. I've read up on it. I'm not a doctor, but I play one in a movie.
You play one on the Tom Dupree show. No, I'm kidding.
That's true. I sort of do.
But I will say that as with every major part of your life, you've got to be your own best advocate. Whether it's your health, whether it's with your finances, you got to do your due diligence and you got to do your own research, and you've got to really use your own mind to figure out what is best for you. Somebody cannot tell you what's best to put in your body, what's best for your diet. You got to figure it out under your own counsel with advice, but you got to make your own decisions.
Absolutely. But with, withholding information that's pertinent to the American public.
Agreed.
Is, for me, it's criminal.
Totally
agree. Because if it's an imbalance in the news, it just keeps you terrified and in compliance, and you are unable to make decisions, and to that point, informed.
Well, let me say this, because I did say on that show, don't be led by fear. It says in the Bible.
We talked about that. That's
I did.
Right. Don't be led
what
by
this,
fear.
This guy said who left the message on the thing, he said, I don't live in fear. Then he goes on and a bunch of F-bombs and stuff. But here's my question. If you don't live in fear, why are you afraid to call me in person? You know, why not call me during business hours when I'm here and let's talk about it and call me the F-bomb to my face? Instead, you chose to do this in the middle of the night. Why? Are you afraid of confronting me? So this the thing is, yeah, I do think a lot of people do live in fear, and I think we're encouraged by the media and the government to live in fear. But I'll give you an example about the getting as many opinions. So we were somewhere, and I had a doctor look at my feet, take x-rays, and they said, you got to have surgery, major surgery. You know, you'll be off each foot for 3 to 4 months. So I said, okay, you know, and I sort of prepared myself for it. Well, I said, you know, really I should get some other opinions. So I went to a lady today. I'm going to actually say her name. She's a wonderful doctor, Dr. Lisa DeNore, DeGnore. She's over at Central Baptist, a real professional. She did an x-ray, and she says, I don't really see anything that requires surgery. You're going to have to get a certain kind of orthotic. You need to start wearing pressure socks because people have edema in their lower extremity, and a lot of people have it. She said even the UK basketball players wear pressure socks. So she said, go get those.
She was trying to make you not feel old, maybe. I'm kidding.
A 20-year-old player's wearing them. Okay, the bottom line is, so I could have gone with this guy and basically been off my feet for nearly a year. Or
with both ankles broken.
And yeah, they go in and break your ankles.
Horrible.
Or listen to this woman. She says, you know, I think this is not, we're not looking at surgery here. Now, I'm going to get another opinion from somebody because I really want to know what is going on with my feet because your feet are important. Mine are beautiful, but I want to keep them for a long time.
You notice crickets. The most beautiful feet are not pretty to me. They're just not.
Well, anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
You got nice feet, right?
I don't know. Well, all I can say is that I hope this gentleman finds answers to his questions, just like I hope to find. I pray and hope that I find answers to mine.
Wouldn't you like to?
You're
see,
looking for more questions. That was a Freudian slip.
No, you know what I'd like to know is what the headlines are gonna look like 10, 15, 20 years from now, looking back on this point in history. That's what's going to be interesting because I think it's going to be a little different than maybe some people think, how the headlines read. Well, that's a wrap for the first hour. Our financial guys are standing by. They'll be joining us. They're in the wings. They love it when I say in the wings. They'll be with us in just a few minutes. You'll want to hear what they got to say. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes with more of the Tom Dupree Show.